This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The critically acclaimed HBO drama The Wire has been off the air for years now, but in many ways, it still feels like one of the most prescient police and policy series ever put on TV. Take, for example, a major subplot in season 3. A longtime Baltimore cop, frustrated by the endless ravages of both the heroin trade and the war on drugs, decides to clean up the streets by doing something unthinkable. He creates free zones, 3 small open-air drug markets where dealers can sell and addicts can use without fear of arrest. In exchange, police are free to go after more serious crimes and residents are able to reclaim their neighborhoods. And in the scene you're about to hear, that district commander tries to sell the idea to one of his younger officers.
This drug thing, this ain't police work. No, it ain't. I mean, I can send any fool with a badge and a gun up on them corners and jack a crew and grab vials. But policing? I mean, you call some a war. And pretty soon, everybody gonna be running around acting like warriors. They're going to be running around on a damn crusade, storming corners, slapping on cuffs, racking up body counts. And when you're at war, you need a enemy. And pretty soon, damn near everybody on every corner is your enemy. And soon the neighborhood that you're supposed to be policing, that's just occupied territory.
Now that's a scene from The Wire, fiction from a decade-old cable drama. But just this week, Jack Cole, a veteran narcotics cop, wrote in the Boston Globe that he spent years chasing buyers and sellers, slamming them, he says, into the criminal justice system. I did more harm than good, Cole writes, and the harder my colleagues and I tried, the more damage we did. So Cole suggests something radical. End what he calls zero-tolerance prohibition on opiates and create those free zones, supervised injection sites where people, quote, sadly but safely meet their heroin addiction. Jack Cole joins us now. He lives in Medford but is a 26-year veteran of the New Jersey State Police. He's also co-founder of the group Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Jack Cole, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we want to know what you think. I mean, should we step back from zero tolerance when it comes to opiates? That seems to be happening with marijuana. And Jack Cole says, why not heroin? Or something like heroin, a vastly different story. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So, Mr. Cole, first of all, I mean, I just want to hear from you briefly about the kinds of experiences that you hinted at in your Boston Globe op-ed that you saw on the streets in New Jersey when you were an undercover narcotics cop that led you to this perspective.
Sure. When I started working undercover, it was the beginning of the war on drugs. That was 1970. And if you look back at 1970 at the statistics, you'll find that we really didn't have much of a drug problem in 1970. As a matter of fact, the likelihood of anybody dying from a result of the drug culture in that year was less than the likelihood of them dying from falling down the steps in their own house or choking to death on their own food at dinner. So you got to wonder, why did we start a war on drugs? There's got to be some other motive besides the fact that we wanted to reduce drug abuse. So I started working, and we were supposed to go out and arrest drug dealers. And since there weren't many drug dealers around back then, you had to go to the biggest cities to find real drug dealers, and I was working in the suburbs about 20 miles outside of New York City. Instead of targeting me on real drug dealers, they targeted me on young kids in college, kids in high school, in between, small friendship groups, 10 or 15 people in the group. And when I'd infiltrate that group and become their friend, come Friday night, somebody might say, hey, you want to get high? And if nobody said that, that was my job. And if anybody took me up on that offer, then one of the friends who had access to the family car or some other way to get to the city would go around with others and say, you want to get high tonight? People would say, sure. While you're in New York City, pick me up a couple joints. Or maybe I heard there's some good blotter acid out there. If you come across any in the city, get me a hit of blotter acid, one dose. I'd put my order in for this same tiny little bit of drugs. Off they go to New York City. We're talking like $5 worth of drugs. They'd come back, and when they handed those drugs out to their friends, when they handed them to me, they became a big-time drug dealer, because that is what we labeled them, and that is what stuck. Uh-huh. And I would stay in that group until I got every single person in the group, which was really easy, because these weren't drug dealers. These were young people doing what we call dipping and dabbing in drugs, experimenting. So they weren't making any money. They weren't even getting their gas money back. So the person that made the first run didn't want to go the next time. It just created this thing where about every 2 months, I would come in with 100 people with cases like this. We'd have a big raid, go out and arrest them and destroy their lives.
So that's why you write in your Globe op-ed that it's dangerous to, quote, try to arrest our way out of this very real problem. But what was it? I mean, you're specifically in the op-ed writing about heroin. What was it that brought you to the point where you thought, where you founded the group Law Enforcement Against Prohibition that goes so far as to say that legalization or the end of zero tolerance for addictive drugs such as heroin is the right way to go?
The more dangerous the drug is, the more reason there is to legalize it, because you can't control or regulate anything that's illegal. When it's illegal, the control and regulation is in the hands of the criminals, and they haven't done too good a job for us, you know. So I would rather have it in the hands of the government. When we created LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, I created it with four other police officers in 2002, and the reason we did it was we want to end drug prohibition around the world today, just like we ended alcohol prohibition in 1933 in this country. Because looking at that terrible law from the viewpoint of law enforcers, we understand that the day after we ended alcohol prohibition, Al Capone and all his smuggling buddies were out of business. They were off our streets. They were no longer out there killing each other to control that very lucrative market. They were no longer killing our children caught in crossfire and drive-by shootings. They were no longer killing us cops charged with fighting that useless war.
So, now, this is something, if I might jump in, this is something that many advocates for legalization frequently point to, because it's a real sort of test case in the country's history. But on the other hand, I imagine many, many people think heroin is not alcohol. We can't really compare the two substances in terms of their addictive properties, their effects on the neighborhoods where their ravages are at the worst. I mean, it's apples and oranges, really.
That's true. Heroin is actually much safer than alcohol. Yes, alcohol is a poison. It eats holes in your liver. It eats holes in your brain. It will kill you in the end. Heroin could be taken by a person. We'd hope that nobody would take it, but it could be taken for their entire life. It wouldn't harm a single cell in their body. What heroin does is two things. First off, it's addictive, which is a bad thing.
Highly addictive. And we spoke with.
But not as highly addictive as, say, cigarettes, which is the most addictive drug we know of. But still, it is addictive. The second thing is if you get too much of it accidentally, it suppresses your breathing and you die of an overdose. Those overdoses will continue to happen as long as these drugs are considered illegal, because nobody knows how much of that tiny package of their powder they're buying is really the drug and how much the cutting agent. If we legalize it, we can regulate these things. You know, nobody today has to worry about what kind of alcohol they're drinking, because it's regulated, it's controlled.
Yeah, so let me ask you something about you saying that heroin is safer than alcohol, because we spoke with an addiction specialist, a doctor, who basically said that the big problem with heroin is that because it's so highly addictive, the addict continuously needs more and more and more. It, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a day. It does take over your life, and then of course there's all the associated, you know, health and medical problems along that just come up with the shooting up of this drug. That it's the addiction in and of itself is a massive problem that distinguishes itself from casual use of alcohol.
Well, we disagree with that. And what we believe is this is a terrible drug. All of them are terrible drugs. We don't want to see one more drug abuser in the world. We spent our whole careers working against that. But let's tell the truth about these things. And if you look at other countries, you can see that this is not that terrible addictive drug that you continue taking more and more and more. Switzerland, 20 years ago, decided they were tired of arresting their children basically for making the mistake of using heroin. So they set aside clinics all around the country. They said, we're going to treat this as a health problem, not a crime problem. And they allow heroin users to come in there and shoot up to 3 times a day under medical supervision with job specialists, educators, people there to wean them off the drugs. The outcomes are amazing. One of the outcomes that they discovered, which they never imagined, was when the people first come in, they can choose whatever amount of heroin they want to shoot up that they think is good for them. And whatever they choose, once they're in there and using this as a regular daily routine, it always goes down, not up. It's not what the people are telling you. Also, there hasn't been a single overdose death there in 20 years. AIDS and hepatitis in Switzerland has now dropped to the lowest per capita rate in all of Europe. Crime was cut by 60%, 60%. I would settle for that.
Well, hang on for just a second, Jack Cole. Listeners, we're speaking with Jack Cole. He's a 26-year veteran of the New Jersey State Police. He lives in Medford now. He's also co-founder and chair of the group Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He recently wrote an op-ed in the Boston Globe saying that it's time to, quote, end the prohibition of heroin. We've got a link to that at our website, radioboston.org. I want to bring in another voice into this conversation briefly. He's David Murray. He joins us on the line from Washington, and he served in the Office of National Drug Control Policy under both Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama as chief scientist of that office and then associate director of supply reduction. He's now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute in Washington. David Murray, welcome to Radio Boston.
Yeah, thanks.
So let me just get your first reaction to what Jack Cole is saying, that, you know, perhaps one way to curb the heroin crisis, as it's actually been referred to here in Massachusetts, is ending its prohibition, legalizing it, creating centers, government-run centers, where people can go and get the heroin they need if they're addicts.
Yeah, it doesn't work out that way. It sounds more like fantasy. I mean, We can't govern or set policy by narrative and anecdote. Basically, Mr. Cole has expressed a few anecdotes about some bad policing and then segued from there into very misleading characterizations of current research about relative safety and danger. I mean, the idea that heroin is safer than alcohol is highly misleading. The idea that it's less addictive than cigarettes is just fundamentally wrong. And the idea that we should be engaged in the state itself distributing highly addictive substances to its citizens, besides the moral qualms that might be raised by that activity and the dependency of a citizen on the state for their heroin fix, from a public health perspective, it's a disaster.
Jack Cole does point to I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but just before we brought you on the line, as you heard, Jack Cole was making the point that some 6 countries at least, including Australia, Canada, and Germany, and he was talking about Switzerland, have introduced some supervised injection sites, which he says has dramatically reduced. HIV, hepatitis-associated medical issues with heroin use. So this is being tried in places.
It certainly has been tried in places. I've visited some of these places, seen it in operation. Very small scale. Switzerland, you might recall, is about 7 million people, maybe 1/40th the population of the United States, highly homogenous. They have problems with outside workers coming to Switzerland, and those are largely the heroin users. And they try to sweep the problem under the rug. I think it's a very difficult thing to see adapted to the United States context, which is much more heterogeneous, much more demographically diverse. And when this has been tried, liberalizing access to heroin in Kurt Schmoke, Baltimore, it was a disaster. You got a huge increase in the number of addicts. You got not a decrease in crime at all. The criminal element, the black market, was still there. You lost deterrent and prevention efforts. You lost the capacity to leverage people into treatment. The recovery incentive was lost. You're basically giving in and maintaining an addict on a continuing basis. And heroin is a poison. They will eventually, through the tolerance aspect, become more and more dangerously involved with the level of the drug that will lead to respiratory suppression. This was tried in Great Britain in the 60s, late early 70s. It turns out it's not a good policy. It's counterproductive.
Yeah.
And it's basically writing people off and giving up on the chance and the prospect for recovery.
David Murray, stand by, because I want to let Jack Cole respond to what you've just said. I mean, David Murray, he said it as plainly as he could. He thinks that fundamentally this is writing off addicts, not actually helping them.
Yeah, well, he's said that many times. We don't agree with it. We were the people out there working these things. We know what kind of reactions we have, and we believe that it is not the drug itself that is causing this devastation. It is the fact that the drug is illegal. The fact that you say the heroin addicts spend their whole day trying to find the heroin and stuff. Well, they do that because there's no place where they can legally get it. They have to hide under a bridge, and they spend all their money on heroin because it's so expensive. It's only that expensive because it's prohibited.
But what about David Murray's point that even opening certain safe injection centers doesn't fully undercut the criminal element at all, or not enough, inadequately?
Nothing will fully undercut the criminal element, but the criminal element will certainly be much better if we legalize these drugs than what we have today. Once we legalize the drugs, we'll still have a drug problem, but then we can start to actually work on the drug problem. Look what we've done. Look what we did with alcohol prohibition. We created organized crime. We created a system where once we did away with our right to regulate alcohol, there was a 600% increase in alcohol poisonings reported in this country. Everything got worse. Now, after only 13 years, we said, we're going to legalize this drug. And we didn't say it because suddenly we found a new system where we decided alcohol's a great drug and we give it to our kids or something. We decided we can no longer live with all the death and destruction. And sure enough, the death and destruction went down after we legalized.
I want to take a quick call here. Joe is calling from Providence. You're on the air, Joe.
Hi, Officer Cole, and I'm sorry.
Mr. David Murray. David Murray as
well.
Oh,
sorry. Yeah. David Murray, too.
What's your thought, Joe?
Well, I'm actually calling in because I did lose somebody very important to me who it was a dual diagnosis situation with PTSD, but they had a serious opiate problem, and they went through the legal system in Massachusetts at various times, and they were very quick to, you know, collect those fines. That was obviously very important, but in terms of even the one thing that could have helped her was the drug testing, they actually completely failed to do it, even though it was sentenced as part of the solution there. And just coming away from all this, I just feel that the current marginalization of these people, it doesn't help at all. I'm surprised that they mentioned that we're giving up on these people when in the real world, it's very hard to get a job with a drug conviction on your record. So I'm not really sure how treatment is inferior to that. And ultimately, I feel like these legal prosecutions just pay no heed to the nuance of the reason that people are, you know, taking drugs. I mean, it's not, these aren't formally happy people. They usually have serious issues. And if we're able to steer them towards an environment like that where there is safe injection and things like that, then they're probably easier to get somebody to talk to them about their other issues and then work in the fact that they need to let go of these drugs. And
Joe, I'm gonna take it back from you there. And thank you so very much for calling and sharing your story. David Murray, Joe points to a lot of things, but one thing that particularly sticks out to me, and Jack Cole had mentioned earlier, is overall, I mean, I think he's calling for a radical shift in thinking because there is a lot of evidence that the war on drugs as a whole has failed. Incarceration rates are up. Addiction rates aren't necessarily plummeting. I mean, we're back in a crisis here in Massachusetts again. So why not open the door to the previously unthinkable ideas that just didn't seem that they would even ever see the light of day?
Well, they have been tried, and they failed. I mean, the point is, let's be realistic and not dwell in fantasy land here. Let me make three quick points, since, you know, the time is short. Imagine the life now of the state distributing heroin to its citizens, and then we have a person asked a question, can they drive a school bus? Can they get a pilot's license? Do they have a driver's license? Can they work as a police officer or a fireman. I mean, they're state-controlled addicts now who are being administered this drug on a regular basis. Their lives are compromised by this action, deliberately by the state. Ask yourself the question. Massachusetts has rates of neonatal birth rates with addiction for opiates that are three times the national average. Do you allow a woman who's taking state injections of heroin to become pregnant? And what is the liability? What's the responsibility here? This is not the type of life that is helpful in aiding the community. Number two, we have drug courts. Drug courts are a new development that have very effectively merged law enforcement as a supervisory element and the public health system's intervention that, rather than putting people into jail, directs them into a treatment program that's sanctioned and supervised. It's a far superior answer because it moves people towards the recovery, the abstinence, the freedom that is possible for them.
And your third point.
Can I get my third point?
Yes, I was just asking.
Imagine this is someone you actually do love, like your sister, in the basement, shooting up heroin that's provided by the state. Is it sufficient for you, in terms of your duty and responsibility to this person, to say, well, at least the needles are clean, or at least the heroin's pharmaceutical grade? Or do you wish for that person a life of recovery where they can have their life back again? To simply administer heroin on a continuing basis removes the incentive, the pressure, and the possibility of people reaching for recovery and attaining it by getting into treatment. Treatment is a superior alternative, and it should be our first choice before we give up.
Well, let me let Jack Cole have the last chance to respond here.
Treatment is what we're looking for. Also, when I was telling you about Switzerland, 20% of the people who come in there to shoot government-issued heroin quit using any drug at all. You know, we're happy if we get 3 to 5% out of our rehabs, and we only track our people 1 year out after they've quit. Over in Switzerland, they track them 5 years out, and 20% are quitting. Why? Because they no longer treat heroin users as a criminal. They're treated as someone with a health problem. So as your caller said, when they go back to get a job, they don't have the stigma of being a criminal. They can actually recover. They can actually get their life back. So 20% have quit using any drug at all. And another wonderful thing that just that happened in Switzerland, and this was according to the very prestigious medical journal, The Lancet, that did a 10-year study on this, they have found that in that 10-year period, new heroin users in Switzerland dropped by 82%. 82%. In every other country I know of, we've registered more heroin users than what we projected 10 years ago. Here it's 82% less.
Well, Jack Cole, he's a Medford resident and a 26-year veteran of the New Jersey State Police. He's written about his call for ending zero-tolerance prohibition on heroin in the Boston Globe. We have a link to his piece at radioboston.org. He's also co-founder of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Jack Cole, thank you so much for coming in today.
You're welcome.
And David Murray, who served in the Office of National Drug Control Policy under Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama, now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute in Washington. David Murray, thank you as well. Well, both gentlemen have given us a lot to think about, so keep this conversation going either on our website or keep sending us tweets at Radio Boston. But stick with us. There's more of the show coming up in just a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.